You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
Welcome to the Director Series Podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
This short period saw the release of some of the most well-regarded films in recent history. Films like No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood. Films like David Fincher's sixth feature, Zodiac.
Learn a lot.
Hello? Hello, this is Melvin Belli. Who am I speaking with?
This is the Zodiac speaking.
Is there something I can call you that's a little less ominous?
Sam.
Sam.
Zodiac's journey to the screen was a long, arduous one, much like the real-life investigation itself. The creative breakthrough came when writer James Vanderbilt based his script off Robert Graysmith's book of the same name. From Graysmith's template, Vanderbilt fashioned a huge tome of a screenplay that was then sent to Fincher, essentially out of respect for his exemplary work with the serial killer genre trappings in Seven. But they expected him to pass because of the similarities between the two works. To their surprise, Fincher responded with interest, and furthermore, he had a special connection to the material. He remembered his childhood in the Bay Area, where Zodiac's unfolding reign of terror was the subject of adults' hushed whispers and his own captivated imagination. In an oblique way, Zodiac is an autobiographical and sentimental film for Fincher. A peon to a bygone, idyllic San Francisco whose innocence was shattered by the Zodiac murders.
Tell me it's not a piece of bloody shit.
Jerk! Fuck! Oh, fucking cop!
I feel it in my bones. You ache to know my name, and so I'll clue you in. But then why spoil the game? Happy Halloween. Paul. You did call him a latent homosexual in at least one of your articles.
Dave? I want a gun.
Zodiac spans three decades of San Francisco history, using the sense of paranoia and panic that enveloped the city during his reign of terror as the chief focusing prism. The film centers around a triptych of leads in Jake Gyllenhaal, Robert Downey Jr., and Mark Ruffalo. The author of the film's source text, Robert Graysmith, is depicted by Gyllenhaal as a goody-two-shoes boy scout and single father who throws himself into a downward spiral of obsession.
Dave Toski sent you?
Yes.
Why?
Maybe he thought that I could do some good.
What, are you some kind of boy scout?
Eagle scout, actually, first class.
His sweet-natured pluckiness is the antithesis of the hard-boiled, cynical detective archetype we've come to expect from these types of films.
I didn't know he was going to send another code.
I just guessed.
Just guessed?
The first one seemed too easy.
This can no longer be ignored. What is that you're drinking?
It's an Aqua Velva. You wouldn't make fun of it if you tried it.
Downey, per usual, steals every scene he's in as the flamboyant, acid-witted Paul Avery.
Who is this guy?
He wishes to remain anonymous. I wish to remain infamous.
So we're going to get long break.
I've got Napa, Vallejo, and DOJ looking at me sideways, and Riverside's telling me I'm on a snipe hunt.
Ruffalo more than holds his own as the detail-oriented police inspector in a bow tie, David Toski, whose actions during the Zodiac case inspire the character of Dirty Harry. These three unconventional leads ooze period authenticity, captivating our attention for the entirety of Zodiac's marathon 3-hour running time. In Zodiac's supporting cast, Fincher has assembled an unexpected and truly eclectic mix of fine character actors. John Carroll Lynch plays Arthur Lee Allen, the prime suspect in Toski and Graysmith's investigation.
He also said that you made statements about killing school children.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Lynch assumes an inherently creepy demeanor that, at the same time, is not overtly threatening. Lynch understands that he has a huge obligation in playing Alan responsibly, since the storyline effectively convicts Alan posthumously as the Zodiac.
Hello, Arthur. Remember us?
When the Zodiac killer is seen on screen, you might notice that it's not actually Lynch playing the role. Fincher wisely uses a different actor for each on-screen Zodiac appearance as a way to further cloud the killer's true identity and abstain from implicating Alan further than the storyline already does. Additionally, this echoes actual survivor testimonies, which were riddled with conflicting and mismatching appearance descriptions.
Glenna said you were a cartoonist.
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing at a gun range?
Reading. Get some more... You need some more napkins.
Indie queen Chloe Sevigny plays Melanie, Gray Smith's second wife, who grows increasingly alienated by his Zodiac obsession as the years pass. As local San Francisco television celebrity Melvin Belli, Brian Cox oozes a professorial confidence and gravitas.
You sound like you're in a great deal of pain.
My head aches. I'm so sick. Oh, I'm gonna kill them.
Elias Codius plays Sergeant Mullinax, an embattled Vallejo police chief, while Dermot Mulroney plays Toski's own chief, Captain Marty Lee. P.T. Anderson Company regular Philip Baker Hall appears as Sherwood Morrill, an esteemed handwriting analyst whose expertise is thrown into question as he succumbs to an escalating alcohol problem. Comedian Adam Goldberg appears in a small role as Duffy Jennings, Avery's sarcastic replacement at the Chronicle. And eagle-eyed Fincher fanatics will also spot the presence of Zach Grenier, who played Edward Norton's boss in Fight Club.
He stops, puts it in park, boom.
I shoot him on the right side. He slumps right.
Maybe you've got your hand on his collar when you shoot.
All right, so either way, I just dump a quart of blood in the front seat.
So why do you get in the front seat?
For the money.
But he's dead. You could just reach over the seat, pull out his wallet. You don't have to go anywhere near the blood. So why do you get in the front seat?
What sets Zodiac apart from other thrillers of its ilk is its dogged attention to detail. Fincher and Vanderbilt built their story using only the facts, gathered from a mix of eyewitness testimony, authentic police documentation, and forensics evidence. The film doesn't depict any murder sequence in which there weren't any survivors, since the dead obviously can't provide accurate details about what went down. Another differentiating aspect of the film is the passage of time being utilized as a major theme, conveyed not just by on-screen X months or years later subtitles, but also by inspired vignettes, like a changing cityscape or music radio montages over a black screen. Zodiac's focus lies in the maddening contradiction of factual accounts that stymied real-life investigators and led to missed clues and dead-end leads. The true identity of the Zodiac was never solved, and the film goes to painstaking lengths to show us exactly why that was the outcome. Zodiac attempts to deconstruct the larger-than-life myth of its namesake, but it also can't help exaggerating him in our own cultural consciousness as the serial killer who got away. A modern boogeyman like Jason or Freddy that transcends the constraints of time and could pop up again at any time to resume his bloody campaign.
Don't get up. I want her to tie you up.
Zodiac is a very important film within Fincher's filmography in that it marks a drastic shift in his style, ushering in a reinvigorated second act fueled by the rise of digital filmmaking cameras that can match celluloid, pixel for crystal. Fincher's early adoption served as a tastemaker's vote of confidence in a fledgling technology, and substantially bolstered the rate of adoption by other filmmakers. Having shot several of his previous commercials on digital with Harris Savitas, Fincher was confident enough that the digital cameras could meet the rigorous demands of his vision for Zodiac, and he subsequently enlisted Savitas' experience as insurance towards that end. Shooting on the Thompson Viper Filmstream camera in 1080p and presenting in the 240:1 aspect ratio, Fincher is able to successfully replicate his signature aesthetic while substantially building on it with the new tools afforded him. Because of digital's extraordinary low-light sensitivity, Fincher and Savitas confidently underexpose their image with high-contrast shadowy lighting, many times using just the available practical lights, which resulted in moody, cavernous interior sequences and bright, idyllic exteriors. Fincher is able to create something of a mundane, workaday look that stays within his established color palette of yellow warm tones and blue-teal cold casts. The procedural, methodical nature of the story is echoed in the observational, objective camera movement and editing. Fincher's dolly and techno crane work is deliberate and precise, as is every cut by Angus Wall in his first solo editing gig for Fincher after co-editing several of his previous features. Wall's work was certainly cut out for him, judging by Fincher's well-documented insistence on doing as many takes as required in order to get the performance he wanted. Zodiac is quite simply one of the most realistic and authentic-looking period films ever made, thanks to Donald Graham Burt's meticulous production design. Burt and Fincher aren't after a stylized, exaggerated vintage look like P.T. Anderson's Boogie Nights, but rather a lived-in, well-worn, and low-key aesthetic. Fincher's borderline obsessive attention to historical detail extended as far as flying in trees via helicopter to make the Lake Berryessa locale look just as it did at the time. Practical solutions like this were augmented by clever, well-hidden CGI and digital matte paintings that never call attention to themselves. For a film so predicated upon its own historical authenticity, however, Fincher acknowledges a surprising amount of artistic license taken with the film's story, compiling compasses of characters and reimagining real-life events in a bid for a streamlined, clean narrative. How can people be so heartless? How can people be so cruel? In developing the film, Fincher initially didn't want to use a traditional score. Instead, he preferred a rich tapestry of popular period songs, radio commercials, and other audio recordings.
Have you considered the killer might be Paul Avery?
Frequently.
Toward that end, he used several different styles of music to reflect the changing decades, such as jazz, R&B, and psychedelic folk rock like Donovan's Hurdy-Gurdy Man, which takes on a pitch-black, foreboding feel when it plays over the film's opening sequence. Here comes a roly-poly man, he's singing songs of love. Once the film was well into post-production, Fincher's regular sound designer Ren Kleiss reportedly suggested that the film stood to benefit from original score during key moments. Fincher eventually agreed and reached out to David Shire, the composer of Alan J. Pakula's All the President's Men, a film that served as Zodiac's tonal influence. Shire's score is spare, utilizing minimal piano chords to create a brooding suite of cues that echo the film's sense of oblique danger and consuming obsession. The story of Zodiac is perfectly suited to Fincher's signature thematic fascinations. Architecture plays a big role here, with Fincher depicting San Francisco as a city in transition. He shows cranes on the skyline, holes in the ground waiting to be filled, and most famously, an impressionistic time-lapse of the Transamerica Tower's construction. This approach extends to his interiors, specifically the Chronicle offices, which slowly transform over the years from a beige bullpen of clacking typewriters and cathedral ceilings to a brighter workspace with low-slung tile ceilings and fluorescent light fixtures.
I can't tell if I wanted it to be Alan so bad because I actually thought it was him, or I just wanted all this to be over.
It's because you thought it was him. And I did too. You know what? Take some time off. Spend some time with your wife and the kids. Go to Candlestick. See a movie.
Nihilism, another recurring theme throughout Fincher's work, pervades the storyline and the actions of its characters. Because the characters are unable to solve the mystery and tie things up with a neat little bow, they either fall into an existential crisis about all their wasted efforts, or they simply lose interest and move on.
Do you know what the chances of us arresting someone are now? Too much time has gone by, okay? Too much of the evidence is lost. People get old, Robert. They forget. Now, I have been a cop for 25 years, murder police for 12. What do you do for a living?
You know what I do for a living.
You're a cartoonist.
So what are you saying?
I am saying Zodiac was my job. It is not yours.
Fincher's exploration of film's inherent artifice is present here in very meta stylings. Film canisters and their contents become promising leads and clues, and the characters get to watch movies about themselves on the screen. Fincher makes a big show of Toski attending the Dirty Harry premiere, for instance. Zodiac's unique tone and subtext is perfectly indicative of Fincher's sensibilities as an artist. Zodiac bowed at the Cannes Film Festival to great reviews, its praise echoed by a cabal of prominent critics stateside. They hailed it as a masterpiece and Fincher's first truly mature work as a filmmaker, the implication being that the maverick director was ready to join the Oscar pantheon of great filmmakers. While the film is criminally overlooked by the Academy in all aspects, time has revealed Zodiac as one of the best films of the decade, and undoubtedly one of Fincher's grandest achievements.
Thank you for listening to the Director Series. For a deeper dive into your favorite filmmakers, go to www.directorseries.net.
The Director Series is made possible in large part by our generous supporters on Patreon. Please visit us at patreon.com/directorseries to see how your contribution enables the continued production of video essays and text articles on your favorite contemporary and classic film directors. Thank you.